the OTB Podcast Network.
9 minutes past nine. We're trying to reflect on the madness of the week that we've seen. And I'm delighted to say we have Stephen Doyle and Joe Molloy with us to give us their impressions of exactly what has gone on here and what we should all be making of it. Stephen, I might start with you in terms of what it means for Irish fans and the League of Ireland, because that's kind of been a little baseline, maybe a little bit, or a minor refrain in all this. What does it genuinely mean for fans of, or what does it mean in terms of an opportunity for the League of Ireland?
Yeah, it was funny because on Tuesday night, I was working at the Bohemians match against Sligo Rovers. And a little bit like Sunday when we were doing the off-the-ball match, Arsenal, Fulham, kind of go in, start doing the game. And an hour and a half, 2 hours later, you come back out and all of a sudden the football world has got into meltdown and you've missed everything. It was quite surreal. But look, I don't think it's going to have a massive, huge impact straight away. I think this thing might be gradual over the next, say, decade. And I don't think it's just, I don't want to, you know, kind of be just kind of harping on about League of Ireland as well. I think this we'll see this kind of benefit the lower leagues in England as well, even like the Championship, League One, League Two, where even before the pandemic hit, we were starting to see much healthier crowds at the grounds at League of Ireland matches, and also in the lower leagues in the UK as well. They were looking quite healthy. Like, you even look at Bohemians, they got over 1,000 memberships for the first time in the club's history while the ground was shut down, which is pretty incredible. Shamrock Rovers have been, you know, attracting massive crowds to that brilliant stadium that they have out there in Talla. The last big one I can remember is that famous game at Dundalk against Shamrock Rovers, the 3-2 at the start of last season, which was an absolutely brilliant spectacle. And you had 7,000 people there. So, and I think this has been happening around the League of Ireland where the crowds have been getting a lot, or they've been increasing. And then you see developments like Finn Park getting the go-ahead. They're going to have a great facility up there, a great stadium. We're going to see Daly Mount Park refurbished, rebuilt, I should say. That's hopefully going to be open by 2025. So slowly but surely, we're going to start seeing much better facilities at the ground, which we all know was something that held the League of Ireland back. And that's something you see in the Championship, in League One, League Two, where clubs like, say, Middlesbrough, Nottingham Forest, Bradford City down in League One, and then even the likes of Salford coming up now, where they've all got really good facilities. And I think that really helps in them attracting crowds. And perhaps these people are a little bit disillusioned with the Premier League club or the big club that they support that was playing in the Champions League. And maybe just, you know, we're going to see, like, even from my own point of view, I've been going to match at Daly Mount Park with my cousin, his brother-in-law, and a couple of lads for the last few years. These are Scottish guys who are now living in Ireland for the last couple of years. And only in recent years, in the last, say, 1 or 2 years, they've decided to buy season tickets, memberships with the club. So, you know, I think it is starting to turn. I don't think there's going to be a big turn away from Premier League clubs and big clubs around Europe. Like, as I think Simon Cooper was making the point with you last night, Joe, on Off the Ball, he was saying that, you know, you go to London stadiums like the likes of Chelsea and Arsenal, I go and commentate on matches there myself, and they're sold out, you know. But is it all local fans? I don't think so. It's all the day trippers. It's the tourists from around the world. And there's no harm in that. If that's the way the clubs want to make money, that's fine. But again, and one thing I would say, my message would be to League of Ireland fans who maybe want to encourage people who are disillusioned with the clubs over the war is to not maybe look down your nose on them. You know, try and encourage them to go. Lads who are maybe going over to see the likes of Everton or Manchester United, Chelsea, 6-7 times a year, maybe say to them, well, go 5 times a year. Take one of those trips that's cost you 200 or 300 quid. Spend it on a season ticket at a League of Ireland club. You're getting best of both worlds.
Yeah, that's a good point. Joe, this PR battle was an absolute disaster from the standpoint of the European Super League. On the flip side of that, it was a PR masterstroke from those who desperately did not want this, namely someone like Gary Neville. To what extent do you think this is down to the influence of Sky Sports and to Gary Neville? Because the fact that they come to him twice on Sunday, it explodes on Sunday evening. Monday Night Football is a massive event, and he speaks in such terms that the football fans can relate to, that all of a sudden they're up in arms. And I just wonder if the connection is there, that Gary Neville has had some sort of massive influence on the behaviour of the football fans in protest over the last couple of days.
Yeah, I think he had a huge effect. I really do. Like, the way he spoke about it was just so militant that there was no chance, really, you could invoke a bit of tribalism afterwards and start speaking as a Man United fan and saying, well, maybe this isn't so bad or there's upsides to this. Like, so the incompetence of the launch obviously played into his hands. It gave him a 48-hour head start, didn't it? You know, it's Sunday and then all of Monday. I think Florentino Perez was doing a daft interview by Monday evening, but otherwise there was just radio silence after this, you know, terrible press release, heartless kind of press release at stupid o'clock Sunday night and silly logo and Germans aren't involved and PSG aren't involved. And, you know, so they were off to a terrible start, but they were so naive to think they wouldn't have to win hearts and minds. And that wouldn't have been that difficult, I don't think.
That's you know, for me, is the outstanding question here is like, I don't think that what they're proposing is so radical and so different. The way it's being painted, that like this could easily come back in a couple of years' time when people have digested a little bit and gone, the new Champions League isn't due to start for a while anyway, so perhaps that's one window of opportunity to keep them at bay. But like, this definitely hasn't gone away, because if you just explained it properly, it's like, okay, yeah, I get it now. Yeah, okay, there'll be have some minor sop to relegation promotion. Those five positions are available for whoever wins whatever other competitions out there. Like, easy enough to fix all those problems.
Yeah. Like, I mean, could you dream of launching something like that with a press release at like 11 o'clock on a Sunday night and a average logo and nothing else? It's just amazing. Like, Simon Cooper made the point last night. Why didn't they talk to Gary Neville in advance? And again, like, we underestimate tribalism. If they had got Jurgen Klopp on board and Klopp had come on television on Monday Night Football and said, you know what, guys, I've looked at it. This will lead to great things for Liverpool. There's a lot of money which is going to flow down. 400 million a year is going to flow down to the pyramid. There'll still be 5-6 places. Maybe we can expand that. I mean, geez, the suggestion or the whole idea was just so grotesque. It was probably going to be difficult to get over the line. But if they had sat around the table, those 12, and said, let's soften this a little bit, you know, 20 places, let's give 10 at minimum to other countries and relegation and promotion, a few other things and more money, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, they went all out, you would have to say. But if they had got something a bit more palatable, got Klopp on board, like, what did Gary Neville say the other night? There's 150 million United fans. I mean, just get them on board. You're kind of up and running. I can't think of another public issue in the last how long where it was 98% against. Like, there's no, you know what I mean? Everything's polarized. I just couldn't believe that it was just across the board against. They couldn't even bring their own fans with them. So it was just so botched, the whole thing. Like, how could it work without PSG and the Germans for a start? You know what I mean? Like, they just weren't ready to go.
It can't. I can't wait till the leaks start coming out about why they decided to go right now. What was it because UEFA were about to announce their thing? Like, what was the spur?
I have an inkling there, Jerry. You mean as in why the thing starts to collapse or why it starts to fray?
Why they decided to make it public before it was actually ready to be made public?
Yeah, I would imagine there's an element of the UEFA thing. I think one of the interesting side notes on this that went under the radar as well was that Florentino Perez actually brought forward the presidential election at Real Madrid so that he had his 4 years signed, sealed and delivered before this thing all kicked off. So I thought that was an interesting bit of timing there from Perez, who seems to engineer a lot of things in his favour. I just feel as well that the pandemic definitely has kind of made a lot of the clubs who are carrying debt want to move this quickly. They wanted to try and get it all in place for this summer, to start this August, so they could start making money and start paying off some of that debt, or, you know, refinancing so they can bring in some of the big signings like Erling Haaland, that kind of thing.
I do agree with that, Stephen, absolutely. But, like, give yourselves 2 extra weeks where the PR company you've just hired has 2 weeks to give you a bit of advice. Like, let's bring Gary Neville through the plans. Let's get another graphic designer on the logos. Let's talk to Klopp. Let's talk to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Let's bring these people in and say, look, number one, if you're the manager of this team, it's going to be great for you because we're going to have more access. You're not going to have to worry about qualification for the Champions League every year. You're going to worry straight about, can you win the league title? If you can't, you put all your eggs in the European basket. Let's go. Let's do this. But instead, it was like a science project.
Ah, And like, I mean, the geeks. They could have done it in so many ways. They could have come out and said, you know what, these UEFA reforms, which by the way, we drove on, but we're disowning them now. These UEFA reforms, this 36-team bloated mess is not fair on the fans.
Or the players. You
know, we want to make the Champions League exciting again.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been a barefaced lie. But at least come up with something. I just, like Simon Cooper said, it's incompetence, you know, and pointed to the fact that there's a lot of not self-made men here.
Yeah.
You've got the Glazer heirs, you've got Sheikh Mansour, you've got...
Cronky married his money.
Agnelli,
the top aren't very clever, I think Simon said, wasn't it?
And I think there's something in that. I mean, he said, in fairness, John Henry's a smart cookie, so, and he does appear to be, obviously. But like, so there's a lot of egos and a lot of lads that just kind of were given all this and probably have deluded themselves into thinking it's down to their great intelligence. But
yeah, but they aren't clever. Are they? Like I was kind of going through the figures there last night. Like, we're talking about entrusting this multi-billion venture in the hands of men who can't even run their own clubs. You know, Barcelona, yeah. €488 million debt. Real Madrid, €354 million debt. Juve, €358 million debt. Milan, 104. Manchester United, £455 million debt. Spurs, £605 million debt. Arsenal, £108 million debt. They can't run their own clubs. How could they run this multi-billion venture? Which they had to get a loan from JP Morgan. We didn't have any news or detail of whether a television company were going to come in here and try and broadcast this. So I just think this thing was there. It was never going to work. You know,
I don't buy that at all, Stephen. I actually think that there's like, from a business perspective, it makes perfect business sense. Like, I don't think the architects of it had enough emotional intelligence to realize that you need to bring the fans with you. But from a business perspective, you can see how the closed shop, revenue sharing, an agreed wage structure, maybe they would ban transfer fees between the teams. Maybe you wouldn't be able to buy players off each other. There's loads of ways that they could have cooked this.
Yeah, but Jared, that's an American model.
Yeah,
it's an American model. It's not. You can't apply to football.
But you can. That's what they were trying to do. It turns out you can. You absolutely can. If everybody agrees to it, you got to do is get to the point where. Say that again.
How many NFL teams are there?
It's 32 teams.
How many NFL teams are there?
32.
Okay. How many soccer clubs are there in Europe?
But the point is, what they're trying to do is to stop that. They're trying to get to the point where there's.
You can't. Well, listen, they kept talking about this football pyramid.
The reason they can't do it here is because they didn't bring the fans with them. If they set up a European Super League where there's no promotion or relegation, all of a sudden that league makes money year after year after year, and you need to be pretty dumb as a club owner to lose money in that scenario.
You can't apply an American model to football in Europe. It's impossible. Absolutely impossible. The Glazers kept mentioning the word pyramid last night. There's a reason it's called a pyramid, because you've got all the blocks at the bottom, the foundations that keep the rest of the top, you know, that feed up to the top clubs. That's, you know, these players don't just, you know, come out of nowhere. There are some of the players that come through the academies at these big clubs, but there's a lot of players who don't. Kevin De Bruyne has been one of them. Do you know what I mean? So you need these clubs. It's like an ecosystem that, you know, even though you might not want these little clubs in your big competition, your league competitions, that's why you have the Europa League. That's why they're starting this Conference League. You know, you need these clubs. These all feed into the bigger clubs. You can't just cut them away, cut them loose, and then expect to have this stagnant collection of 20 teams are just like, what happens with the five teams that they were bringing in? You know, what happens with them the following year? You know, like, you just can't have, people are saying the Champions League is boring. How boring is it going to get watching the same 20 teams in 10 years' time? People give out about Rangers and Celtic playing each other four times a year. You know,
is it going to get boring watching Paris Saint Germain versus Bayern? I don't know if it is, Stephen. Like, that's the thing.
Absolutely, it will.
But there's no evidence that the football's actually getting to a point where those matches are better than they have been in the past. I absolutely agree that the pyramid has to exist. But again, from a PR perspective, all you do is say we're going to put more money into that than UEFA are doing. That's all you say. It's like, we're going to generate more money. We're going to give more money than UEFA are doing. And that's argued away.
Where does the money come from? Like, they had to get money off of a bank to start it off. There was no broadcast agreement in place.
But that's not a broadcast agreement. Like, that's easy, Stephen. You know, DAZN have just given Eddie Hearn hundreds of millions to stream boxing in Ireland and England. Like, There's endless amounts of money floating around.
They mightn't be looking for their own broadcast agreement, Stephen. Like,
yeah, well, that's
this
that's
is a fight to break the model now, isn't it? This is so we've come from an era where it's UEFA and FIFA and Sky and BT and all the broadcasters. So they own the game. They own the game at the moment. They make the money. UEFA generate about $3 billion a year. Sky hand over their money. BT hand over their money. They control everything. So the new owners have come along and said, why do you control the game? We're now going to break that model. That model, it worked. It was great. That model's over. We're going to take it. And look, they did it in the most grotesque way I know. But say, and Simon Cooper said last night, say they had even just come up with the current Champions League structure. You know, say they hadn't been as greedy, for instance, and within that Champions League structure, they'd take more money for themselves. But say they had come up with that same structure, it was somehow palatable to the fans. They speak to the very influential Gary Neville's of the world and they say, look, Gary, and because this was their pitch as well, we're going to do what UEFA and everyone's doing, but we're going to do it better. We're going to make more money, you know? So this is going to lead to more money. It's going to flow down. You come with us, Jurgen. You come with, explain it to the fans. This is better. They break the model, UEFA, FIFA, Sky, good luck. Do they need a broadcaster? Mm. They set up their own, they can afford the cameras. They set up their own TV company. Yeah. We all hand over. What did Gary Neville say on Monday night? Yeah. There's 150 million United fans. Get them all to pay a pound, you know, per game. So, like, they're not thinking about broadcasters and all and the way it was and pyramids. The pyramid thing is a tax they have to pay to keep everyone happy. And I guess maybe they don't mind that there's clubs for Kevin De Bruyne to come through and everything. But ultimately, as Jer said, they hate the fact that, well, there's different owners. The Americans don't understand this concept whereby 25% of their revenue is uncertain until they make the top four. There is the desperation of Madrid and Barcelona and the Italian clubs to keep up with the oil states. I mean, Barcelona are close to $1 billion in debt now. That's not just pandemic. 70% of their revenue goes just on wages alone. So it's not being run well. So they all have different priorities, but everyone's priority converges on let's make more money. Let's be in complete control of this thing. And we're laughing.
Well, it depends what you want to get out of football, doesn't it? Because
they want to get out of football. What we want to get out of football is watching good matches and a sense of community and all that kind of stuff. But I mean, we're talking about their perspective here. We're not saying it's right. We're not saying it's good for the game. We're not saying any of that. Well, but that's what's going on.
I'd be looking at addressing some, like, one of their issues was there's people from the age of 16 to 24 aren't interested in football anymore. Well, maybe that's because you're pricing them out of the stadiums.
Sure.
You know, if you want to go see El Clasico, €120, the cheapest ticket. How is any 16 to 24-year-old going to afford that? Manchester United are charging over £100 for tickets, you know.
Don't kids fall in love with the big games on TV, though? Isn't that like my first experience?
Not Manchester United fans, do they? Like, do fans from Manchester fall in love with Manchester United, watch them on the TV? No, they go out to the games.
Well, a small amount of them do. When you consider that the 150 million fans figure that that Gary Neville threw out, you know, what percentage of those have been to matches? Have a million Manchester United fans been to matches over the last 20 years, maybe, from around the world? So it's...
And that's the problem, because football is an outdoor game. It's played on a football pitch in a stadium with supporters, you know. And I do think that there is that. I think Daniel Lambert spoke about it on OTBM yesterday. It's just that Irish supporters, especially, have lost that unique feeling of going to a live football match. Like, I go to matches around Europe. I've been to, in the last couple of years, been to Real Betis down in Spain. I've been to Athletic Bilbao, Ajax Athens in Greece, matches in Holland. Like, it's the most incredible experience going to a match. And I'd recommend anybody go with the away supporters to these games. It's the most incredible experience. There's nothing like it.
And Stephen, don't you think that the current owners, and again, their priority is money, but don't you think they're banking on the fact that of the global fan base, the percentage of matchgoers is tiny?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But this is the thing. These people...
They're probably right in that respect as well, though, aren't they?
Like, money's the most important thing to these guys. But you know, if you're in football for profit, you know, you're not a very good businessman, are you?
The money is an important factor for all the fans, though, is the thing, and that's going to be really interesting to see how long this sense of community actually stands up for, because the sense of community is nonsense, really, isn't it, when it comes to being a supporter of a top Premier League club, to being the majority of those supporters, especially if you're not from that city or if you don't live in that community, for example. What you want is your owners to be rich and pay big money to ensure that your team continues to contend. So this idea was...
Well, is that an elephant in the room then, lads? Is it, you know, player salaries? You know, maybe this is where they start to need to start looking is at player salaries, because some of them are just ridiculous now. You know, David De Gea is sitting on the bench getting £300,000 a week.
Yeah, so that's what would be the next outcome of that then, if they do start to address that, particularly in England, where there is talk of some sort of legislation? We'll have to wait and see if that actually manifests itself in reality. But if that's a reality where there is a significant salary cap put on Premier League clubs, all British clubs, for example, the players are just going to go elsewhere. That will damage the Premier League brand. I know the Chinese Super League is a complete bust at this point, but there might be an alternative to that. It might well be somewhere else in Europe. Players will find somewhere else to play their trade. The money is what makes the Premier League good. Let's not make any bones about it.
Mm. They're also not in debt the way we're discussing, really. I mean, I know you're saying United are in debt, but they're not really. You know, it's a leveraged buyout. Glazers have taken £1 billion from the club. They still turn a profit every year, even with David De Gea sitting on the bench, and the Glazers still take a healthy dividend. So, you know, from a losing money point of view, the Glazers haven't lost a thing. They bought an asset for 700 odd million from memory with the fans' money, and then it's now worth 3 billion and they've taken money out of it every year. So there's no losing money there. Stan Kroenke has not put a cent of his own money into the club. It's worth 2 billion. He hasn't put a cent of his own money in. And, you know, it's kind of, he's an interesting case, isn't he? Mm. Like, he just runs it down the middle. And that way he doesn't have to spend crazy money on players all the time, putting his own money, chasing silly nonsense like winning in a Premier League. There's no danger of relegation. They just keep kind of trundling on. Liverpool turn a profit. So, like, they probably are, you know, they're still making money as well, Stephen, a lot of them.
Yeah, but Liverpool turn a profit, and John Henry was notable in the, you know, the reason he got involved is because he couldn't believe that UEFA were so soft when it came to financial fair play. Like, he knows that the financial fair play thing was an absolute joke. And this is why he threw his lot in with the Super League, is because he knew that they would never be able to match the spending of Paris Saint-Germain and Manchester City.
Yeah, that's true. It was interesting that in this breakaway league, one of the few positive things you would say is that they had strict salary caps.
And I think that ultimately, the stratification of European football has that top tier where it is the nation states and the petrol money that they can put in. And Chelsea are kind of, in the Venn diagram, they're certainly more up there if they wanted to be. Abramovich said he wanted to start running the company properly, and then last season that seemed to change and they ploughed loads of money back into it. So you would expect they will continue to do that. But the rest of them, like, how in future will John W. Henry and Stan Kroenke and Real Madrid and all of those other clubs like Barcelona actually finance the arms race that's coming? Especially when financial fair play seems to be completely irrelevant. And there's loads of different ways around it. As we've seen, the rules get flouted. You get kicked out of the Champions League, but you don't really. You actually don't get kicked out of the Champions League. You might have one transfer window where you're not allowed to buy players, but that's okay because you've invested so much money in your academy and I'm not even sure that that counts against your financial fair play. So, I don't know. I don't think this has gone away at all. I think that there's like a... It seems like this battle has been lost. But what they'll do is they'll learn. The next people will come along and go, okay, I see what you did there. Let's fix it next time.
And like that battle...
Will they learn, though? Will they learn? Because, you know, John Henry's done a number of things to annoy Liverpool fans. And every time he comes out and he says, sorry, I've listened to you and I'll take these points on board and we'll try and make... You know, it happened last year with the furlough thing. It happened with the whole incident with the buying up a property around Anfield, and then
but they won the league.
The area
they won the league, and the Liverpool fans thought he was great. Like, you know, if Tony Evans is a great piece on the there's a couple of great pieces on the Independent website where you can track his relationship with John W. Henry, where they were like he got summoned to a lunch meeting with him, and John W. Henry said there was a list of people I should never speak to, and you were on it. And then they end up on the tube together, and they had this weird kind of correspondence where he's actually writing notes for his for John W. Henry's address on the day of Hillsborough. And then he wins the league, and Tony Evans writes this piece about, like, look, this guy, you know, I've had my ups and downs with him, but you've got to give him the credit. And the Liverpool fans at that stage thought he was an absolute legend. Since then, there's this misstep. But if they buy Mbappe, if something like that happens, Did the Liverpool fans go, "Ah, oh, John W. Henry, you've got to sell this club because you just bought us the best player in the world. Get out of here."
Your FSG out was trending in January. Like, we can't overlook... It wasn't all rosy until this week. It was trending because they didn't sign a centre-back. That is what football is going to turn back into immediately. And that is the status quo. People think that some sort of change has been won this week. As if they're... Like, Arab Spring was the phrase used by Tom English earlier on. As if this sort of protest has led to some massive society shift. Only one thing has been won this week, and that is the status quo. So that things can stay the same. So that Gary Neville can have the same job because Sky Sports at the same level of influence, and that British football is still as influential all around the world in the Premier League sense of things.
A worse version of the status quo because the new Champions League is coming in. Steve, I think you're right. That I hope that you're right, that there will be some kind of recalibration of people's local relationship with football.
The other thing as well, I just think... I do think there was long-term damage done this week. I agree with you, Owen, actually. I don't think this kind of went frayed at the edges just because of supporters and Gary Neville rousing supporters and that kind of thing. Like and I spoke to you, Jared, during the week. My kind of gut feeling was that Chelsea and Manchester City are in the Champions League semi-finals. Roman Abramovich is obsessed with winning the European Cup. He wants a second one. Manchester City have never won the European Cup. They are obsessed with winning it. And I think they were the clubs that got the cold feet because they don't need to be in this Super League. As you were mentioning earlier, Jerry, like they've got endless pots of money at both those clubs. They don't need to jump into the Super League, but they do want the credit with their supporters of winning the European Cup this season. They're in the semi-finals. They didn't want to jeopardise that. And I think they were the clubs that got the cold feet, and that's where the whole thing started to crumble.
I love the Champions League. I love this Champions League, the way it's been over the last decade. I think it's been some of the best things that has ever happened in world sport. It's the best players playing in knockout matches, under lights, midweek. Sometimes it rains. It's absolutely sensational. It's like, it's as good as anything in the world. And they're like, nah, we want more. That's the problem.
Yeah, that is the problem. And on Owen's point, I think Owen's absolutely spot on. John Barnes was brilliant yesterday. He did a couple of the breakfast shows on UK television, and I listened to a lot of talk sport this week, and it's taken its toll. But the fans are all phoning in saying, "We've won." And I think a lot of the presenters are saying, "The fans, you have won. You have done this. It's a victory for the fans. Everything is rosy again. Like, it's a real football is as one celebration." And John Barnes came on and said, "Look, this is just a fight between the new owners, as we've said, and UEFA, FIFA, Sky, BT, to see who can exploit the masses for the next generation. Either way, the masses are being exploited." So with this victory, he said, our ticket price is coming down. Is subscription TV going to go down? No. The winner here, as Owen said, has been the status quo. And that's already treating fans pretty poorly. It's leveraging their loyalty. Look at Newcastle. Look at, you know, any number of clubs. And they've won this battle, and that's the status quo survives. But will they win the war? As you said, Jerry, I don't think so. I think these Super 12 come away, they regroup, they regather. Now, it's probably diminished their power in the short term, and there's a real sense of, like, best of luck trying to get this off the ground when this is fresh in the memory. But, I mean, what would you think? 5, 6, 7 years, a flashy presentation, the right people on board. It will start with, we've listened to the fans.
Yeah.
And we agree that this Champions League has become too bloated, and we want to give you the best football.
And we'll give you a team. Away to go. We'll give you a team in Qatar and Dubai. And all of a sudden,
well, listen, a team in Dublin and have Steve Doyle signed up in 5 minutes flat.
Listen, Joe, all I'm going to say, you're right, 13th of April, St. Pat's, home to Longford. Brian Kerr has a spot on the Camac for you. He wants to see it out there. Joe and Brian.
I'd love to. I do think you're right, though. I think there is a chance for, not because of this, by the way, not because, you know, suddenly the scales have fallen from our eyes and we realise that actually the Glazers don't care about me, the fan. Like, I don't think that's, I mean, if that's happened, it's been an odd 16 years for you. But I do think, just speaking anecdotally, Steo, amongst my friends or whatever, maybe it's age, but I do think that the Premier League, from when we really fell in love with football in the 90s, that was kind of a sweet spot where the money was coming in and there was a bit of glamour and it was an attractive product. And but it was still so relatable, wasn't it? And you know, the Abramovich era kicks off this new era, and then the television money. I do think it's become so sanitized, so corporate, so kind of hollow. I find a lot of my friends have drifted away from it. Like, they take it or leave it. They watch the big games, but a lot of us not into it the way we were. And I think there is a kind of understanding now that, God, going to an actual football game, sense of community, relationship with a club that, you know, isn't out to screw you at every turn. There is something very attractive, I think, about that to enough people to really get a bit of momentum going now in the league, as you said, once facilities and different things come through.
I hope so. And I hope
yeah, absolutely. Really yeah.
We're out of time, but this has been great, lads. Thanks very much to the two of you for joining us early this morning. OTBM is live in association with Gillette. Good morning. Start with Gillette, giving you the confidence to tackle the day ahead. Great debate, lads. Smashing debate, guys. Wow, that was entertaining. Often wondered how two journalists that have different opinions would really go at it. That's not actually speaking about us today. That's about yesterday's Harris versus Hunter debate on the WhatsApp from Alan Mahi. So you can get us that 0879 180 180. My thanks to Joe Malloy and to Stephen Doyle.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.